refused to give up on the concept of peace. So I realized that we're in, as Martin Luther King has said, 5 minutes before midnight and the clock striking as we speak.
The United States military is taking advantage because they know that they can get these Turkish workers at a very low wage.
Call on our representatives to please represent us and please tell George Bush to stop this war.
We will find a way of resuming our humanitarian activities to help the Iraqi people who have suffered for so long and do whatever we can to give them assistance and support.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Monday, March 17th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration abandons efforts to find a peaceful solution through the UN as Britain withdraws its resolution seeking an alternative to war against Iraq. Bush told Saddam Hussein to flee Iraq or face a U.S.-led invasion, abandoning UN diplomacy to brace Americans for war within days. The president, commander-in-chief of 250,000 U.S. troops poised at the borders of Iraq, plans to address the nation at 8 p.m. this evening. Speaking earlier this morning at the UN, Secretary General Kofi Annan says the U.S. recommended that the inspectors be withdrawn.
Yesterday, the UNMOVIC, the Atomic Agency, and myself got information from the United States authorities that it would be prudent not to leave our staff in the region. I have just informed the Council that we will withdraw the UNMOVIC and Atomic Agency inspectors. We will withdraw the UN humanitarian workers. We will withdraw the UNICOM troops on the Iraq-Kuwaiti border who are also not able to operate. Implication of these withdrawals will mean that the mandates will be suspended because they will be inoperable. We cannot, for example, handle the oil for food when we do not have inspectors to monitor the imports. We do not have oil inspectors who would monitor exports of oil, and we don't have the humanitarian personnel who would monitor the distribution, receipt and distribution of the food supplies. So I have informed the Council of these suspensions. This does not mean that should war come to Iraq, that the UN will sit back and not do anything to help the Iraqi population. We will find a way of resuming our humanitarian activities to help the Iraqi people who have suffered for so long and do whatever we can to give them assistance and support. And as you know, we have undertaken major contingency planning to be able to move forward as soon as we can.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. Over the weekend, President Bush, Spain's President Aznar, and British Prime Minister Tony Blair huddled on the tiny island off Portugal, the Azores, to plan their military strategy. Blair says there was no choice but to issue an ultimatum to Saddam Hussein.
Even some days ago, we were prepared to set out clear tests that allowed us to conclude whether he was cooperating fully or not, with a clear ultimatum to him if he refused to do so. And the reason we approached it in that way is that that is what we agreed in Resolution 1441. This was his final opportunity. He had to disarm unconditionally. Serious consequences would follow if he failed to do so. And this is really the impasse that we have. Because some say there should be no ultimatum, no authorization of force in any new UN resolution. Instead, more discussion in the event of non-compliance. But the truth is that without a credible ultimatum authorizing force in the event of non-compliance, then more discussion is just more delay. With Saddam remaining armed with weapons of mass destruction, and continuing a brutal, murderous regime in Iraq.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair, President Bush speaking at the same meeting, said the onus for peace is now on Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein can't leave the country. if he's interested in peace. You see, the decision is his to make, and it's been his to make all along as to whether or not there's the use of the military. He got to decide whether he's going to disarm, and he didn't. He can decide whether he wants to leave the country. These are his decisions to make, and thus far he has made bad decisions.
Dilip Hero, author of Iraq in the Eye of the Storm, spoke with Peace Watch this morning from London, where he reacted to the events over the last 24 hours, the meeting in the Azores, and the president's upcoming address to the nation tonight.
It's not surprising. See, what's happened is very interesting. The three leaders met in a small island in mid-Atlantic. That itself, for me, captures the isolation of these three leaders. They did not choose to meet in any capital city because they were afraid of the massive demonstrations which have taken place against their position, and the fact that they just got together, you know, in the middle of Atlantic, goes to show that they are isolated. See, just to bear in mind, let's take these three countries. Of course, you know, in Spain, even though Mr. Prime Minister Anzar supports the United States, 80% of the people in Spain are against war. In Britain, that figure is 50%. And, of course, even in the USA, as you probably know, at the end of January in the USA, 20% people are against the war. At the end of February, that figure went to 37%. So it doubled in 1 month. And part of the reason Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair are pushing this thing so fast is because they know that each day, each week that goes by, opposition to war is growing. Of course, there's also the consideration that you mentioned that it gets very hot in the desert. You know, and come early April, the temperature will go to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and therefore the troops will not be able to use the... I mean, not that they will not be able to use it, but they will find it extremely difficult to wear these anti-chemical suits, which are very, very hot. And that is also why these leaders are pushing for something where the peaceful means to resolve this disarmament problem have not been exhausted, not only according to me, but even according to Jimmy Carter, who, you know, he wrote the op-ed in the New York Times about 10 days ago, saying exactly the peaceful means have not been exhausted to disarm Iraq.
What other measures might they take in a peaceful manner to disarm Iraq that have not been pursued?
I think that the steps have been taken. See, the point is very simple, which is that, you know, 11 out of 15 Security Council members say more time should be given to the inspectors to do the job they are required to do. And also to remember, and of course now I speak here as the author of the book, Iraq in the Eye of the Storm. In Chapter 6, I give the details of what the UN inspectors did from May 1991 to December 1998, when they were withdrawn by Richard Butler. They were not expelled. They were withdrawn by Richard Butler, who was their chief inspector, so that Mr. Clinton, President Clinton, could launch his Desert Fox operation, which went on for 100 hours, during which the Pentagon used 90 more cruise missiles than the Pentagon had used in the 42-day war of 1991. So the point is that if the inspectors were there before, for 7.5 years, 90 months, this time they've hardly been there for 90 days, maybe a little over 90 days. So this whole rushing and hushing, you know, it simply goes to show that the U.S. and the U.K. had a hidden agenda, you know, and they have not really interested in disarming. They basically want a regime change. There's another example of total confusion. If you read the hundreds of statements made by U.S. officials and the U.K. officials, at one time they said, we are disarming Iraq. Second time they say, we want regime change in Iraq. Third time they say that Saddam Hussein, we are going to rearrange the whole Middle East region. So you wonder, you know, what? Please be clear. If it's a question of regime change, remember Bush Jr.'s father, Bush Sr., he brought about regime change in Panama. He sent the troops. They went in. They overthrew Noriega. They brought him to Miami. He's in jail now. So if regime change is a unilateral policy of Britain or bilateral policy of Britain and America, then they can go ahead, use the military means, and bring about regime change. They don't have to, therefore, may surround the United Nations Security Council. But if the objective is disarming Iraq, and if the subject is with the Security Council, not now, since April 1991, this subject has been the Security Council. They have passed many resolutions on the subject. If that is the case, then you should stay with the Security Council. Majority vote, 11 out of 15 members say, give more time to inspect this, but these two countries have their own agenda.
Mm-hmm. Dilipiro, what long-term consequences do you see if of the U.S. choosing to act without the authorization of the Security Council? In other words, the U.S. Pursued the process for so long, which seemed to lend credibility to the role of the U.N., and now it's backing out anyway when it saw it was obvious that it wouldn't get the needed support. What about ramifications surrounding relationships between the United States and the rest of the world?
Well, I think they will be damaged. They will be damaged irreparably, because the point is that's emerging very simply is you see that United States, of course, we know is the sole superpower. I mean that's a given. The only thing the policymakers are not able to get through their thickest skulls is that military power in itself is not enough. And, of course, if you think of somebody like Rumsfeld or even Mr. Cheney, because you heard Mr. Rumsfeld saying, if Britain doesn't come in, we'll go on our own. So there is Mr. Blair, who is considered by 38% of British people with the poodle of America. He was being elbowed out. You want to come in, so we'll go on our own. So what I mean saying is that there are, of course, these super hawks in America. They simply think that because they have the best high-tech weapons, and they have the best military strategy. Therefore, the whole world will follow them, and therefore they can reshape the whole world in their own image. I'm afraid they are sadly mistaken, because military power is not enough. And in this case, as you very rightly say, in Honduras, three leaders meeting, in a way out place, only goes to show that this military action will have very little support outside these two countries, including, I said, in Spain. Interestingly, Spain doesn't have a single soldier in the Persian Gulf. And of course, the only other country which has soldiers is the United Kingdom. So if they do this, this will have a severe consequences, and also very simple, memory jerk is important, which is, that these two countries are white countries. I mean, both Britain and America. They will be marching into an Arab country, essentially recreating a colony. This is outright to anybody with any sophistication can see this is a return of the old Anglo-American imperialism being imposed on people, with the power of the gun. Mm-hmm. But the question is, we are not talking of 19th century, early 20th century, we're talking of early 21st century, and that will not really hold for too long. It will create more problems than it will solve, and it will become so, visually obvious that these white men are actually imposing their will on these brown Arabs.
Dilipiro, author of Iraq in the Eye of the Storm. During this weekend's Anglo-American press conference held with the leaders of Spain and Portugal in the Azores, President Bush failed to mention Mideast peace progress as a possible byproduct of an invasion of Iraq. British Prime Minister Tony Blair alluded to moving forward on a so-called roadmap to peace, but there's little hope today for peace in the Israeli-occupied Palestinian territories, where Israeli troops killed 10 Palestinians, including an infant and a 13-year-old boy, in raids on the Gaza Strip. Also killed was the first non-Palestinian opponent of Israel's pre-war escalation in the occupied territories. Yesterday in Rafah, Rachel Corey, a 23-year-old American peace activist and college student from Olympia, Washington, was crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer driver who reportedly looked her in the eye after she had clearly identified herself in front of a Palestinian residence. Jeff Halper is the coordinator of the Israeli Committee Against the Demolitions. In an interview with Peace Watch producer Robert Night on Wake Up Call at Pacifica Station WBAI in New York, Halper noted that this weekend's tragedy and the ongoing Palestinian crackdown is directly related to Israel's growing role in the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq.
First of all, I'd like to convey in the name of the entire Israeli peace movement, our condolences and our sadness to Rachel's family over what happened. She isn't the first person that's died Israel has a policy, actually, of demolishing houses on top of people in general, but she's the first non-Palestinian, let's say, who has died. And it's a very sad thing. I don't know if there's any such thing as a meaningful death, but certainly doing what she was doing, you know, gives tremendous significance to her life. Gaza is... you can't describe Gaza. Even in terms of hell, you can't describe Gaza. It's a prison camp. It's a concentration camp. A wired-in, fenced-in, barbed wire place where more than a million Palestinians are living without water, without much food. They're like fish in a barrel. They're being killed all the time. You know, last night there were 11 Palestinians killed, including three kids in a refugee camp by the Israeli army. Today, so far, since this morning, there's been at least 10 that have been killed in the refugee camps in Gaza. Their houses are bulldozed. Their fields are completely bulldozed. In the last 2 years, there have been more than 600 houses that have been demolished in Gaza, and thousands of houses have been damaged or left uninhabitable. People are being attacked not only by bulldozers, and it's hard to describe the D9 bulldozer, the Caterpillar bulldozer, that's about two stories high with a gigantic shovel. It's used, really, although it's been custom-made for the Israeli army for demolishing homes and buildings, is really designed for work in mines. It's this massive mining-type machinery that's being used against a civilian population. And not only a civilian population, but these are refugees. In a sense, Israel has a special responsibility, you know, having driven out the refugees in 1948, having prevented their return illegally to their lands within the country. Now Israel, in a sense, is making refugees of them yet again. And just killing people without impunity is the only word that you can use. With absolute impunity coming in, not only bulldozers, but the F-16 fighter planes supplied by the United States, Cobra and Apache helicopter gunships with laser missiles, tanks, all kinds of artillery, all against heavily, densely populated civilian centers in refugee camps and cities and towns. It's just a terrible thing that's happening almost in front of our eyes. It's not exactly in front of our eyes because it's very hard to get into Gaza. And where Rachel was and where the other ISM people are is almost another planet. Israeli peace activists can't get into Gaza. Journalists have trouble getting in. It's closed to the eyes of the outside world. And essentially you have a million people at the absolute mercy of a merciless army.
I'm wondering if the imminence of all-out war in Iraq, has that had the intended effect of quieting the Israeli protest to these policies as well as the international protest?
No, it'll go on. We're in for the long haul. We're not going to be weakened. It's very hard for us. But we just had a meeting a couple days ago. 17 Israeli peace and human rights organizations with a large number of Palestinian organizations and NGOs, and we set up an emergency committee. We're having a press conference about it tomorrow morning, an emergency committee that will try to work to defend Palestinians and monitor what's happening when the war breaks out against Iraq, because we're expecting reprisals against the Palestinians. Among other things we're concerned about, of course, is transfer, either a mass transfer or a selective transfer of Palestinian leaders and intellectuals and political activists outside of the country. We're concerned about the tremendous rise in demolition of homes, a curfew in which Israel can do a lot of things without the press being able to cover things, a forced starvation even, which is happening in many areas, mass detention of activists. In other words, there's a lot of very, very serious things that Israel can do under the cover of war with Iraq that would, in a sense, try to break the Palestinians and create facts on the grounds that would prevent any thought of any Palestinian state afterwards.
There's more than just the cover of war. As we've been reporting here, for the first time in U.S. military history, another nation will be sitting side by side at the command and control structure for the Iraqi war. Israeli officers will be sitting at consoles with real-time intelligence and response data in the Southern Command headquarters. So there's quite an active role being taken there. We're told also that Israeli special intelligence and military forces are operating out of Jordan and clearing out the missiles and such. So in closing, I'd like to ask you how the Israeli involvement in the war of Iraq changes the political complexion there.
You know what? It's hard to know. Israel is pushing for the war because it believes it will come out much stronger. The end of Saddam Hussein will undermine the Palestinians, but a post-Saddam Iraq will be the center post of American control in the Middle East. And Israel is very open about being the American center for control in the Middle East. So Israel believes it's going to come out stronger. On the other hand, Europe, and especially Blair, are pushing this idea of the roadmap to try to get some kind of a meaningful peace process back on track. Bush claims that he's going to, he has to, in a sense, support it because he owes Europe for coming in with the war of Iraq. So the war of Iraq, ironically, could create a certain pressures on Israel to give something to the Palestinians so that the war in Iraq doesn't come out as simply a war of the West against the Arabs or against the Muslim world.
Jeff Halper, coordinator of the Israeli Committee Against the Demolitions, speaking with Robert Knight on WBAI's Wake Up Call. As the U.S. administration is harnessing its might to attack Iraq, citizens in this country are stepping up their actions to stop the war machine. This morning, approximately 200 people rallied on the west lawn of the Capitol, holding signs and puppets. Josh Chaffin was there, and here's what some of the protesters had to say.
My name is Ted Glick. I'm a national organizer with United for Peace and Justice. Congress has abdicated its responsibility. They need to take action. They need, at the very minimum, debate this drive towards war. Congress needs to be flooded with bodies here, with bodies in local congressional offices. They need to feel the heat of an aroused peace movement that refuses to accept going to war without a vote of Congress. This would be another illegal war if it takes place, and there's no congressional authorization for it.
Jennifer Carr, and I work with a group called Peace Action. I live in Mount Rainier, Maryland. We're planning to go to war anyway, despite world opinion, despite the opinion of a huge number of people in the United States, and that before that happens, they should hear from us. They should have some kind of strong presence. And also, you know, the Congress needs to be held accountable for this, is part of what we're doing today also. Congress did decide to turn over the authority to go to war to the president. And, you know, the way I look at it is we're at a very critical moment right now. And if there are people who are willing to go and put themselves at risk, then, you know, Congress can step up and they can put themselves at a little bit of risk, too. There's huge consequences to going to war. They're bigger than the consequences that our representatives face if they decide to take a strong stand and step up and try to do something about this situation.
52 were arrested when they crossed the police line in an act of civil disobedience. The crowd cheered in support of those being arrested as police tied the plastic handcuffs. Reem Kathuta, Peace Watch producer from WPFW in Washington, D.C., caught up with the women arrested after they were put on a bus. First, she spoke with Medea Benjamin, an organizer with Global Exchange and Code Pink.
This action day was called by a number of different organizations, from faith-based groups to Code Pink to the September 11th family members, United for Peace and Justice, and it is our last-ditch effort to try to call on our representatives to please represent us and please tell George Bush to stop this war. So many of us have been doing our democratic duty as citizens for months and months and months, putting all of our time and energies into trying to make this democracy work, to make our country adhere to the rule of law. And we feel that we've been betrayed by our own government. And this action today, dozens and dozens of us crossed the police lines trying to move into the Capitol. We feel that this is our 11th hour plea to our Congress people to say, told George Bush, we don't want this war. We are calling on people all over the country to do sit-ins in the offices of their congresspeople, do sit-ins in the federal buildings, any office that represents a government entity. We have tried everything else, and we are at our wit's end. So we are saying to people, please gather strength from the tradition of this country of civil disobedience in times of great tragedy like this one. And we hope that around the country people will be doing this kind of action like we're doing today. I'm here with many, many women who have never been arrested before, don't consider themselves activists, but they are so upset by what's happening that they felt compelled to join in this action today. So I think there are some very wonderful people standing up for democracy at this hour of darkness. I'll pass you to one of the women who has never done any kind of action like this in her life, and today is her desperate cry to make our democracy work.
Connie Paraskeva.
Yes, hi, Connie.
I'd like you to know that my employment, as it has been for the last 16 years, is using USAID, that's the Agency for International Development funding, to promote democratic processes abroad. That's the Middle East, that's every country in the world where AID works, and even in some non-presence countries. And I just don't feel there's any integrity in doing my job promoting democratic systems in other countries when civil society in this country has been trying so hard for the last many months to voice its opinion to our elected leaders. And I don't believe that they're taking our viewpoint seriously enough, and I think that as large of numbers as possible of us need to register the seriousness of our opinions by showing that we are willing to engage in civil disobedience, to get arrest records for the first time in many of our lives, to make this opinion. We're doing what we can as average citizens to try to influence opinion, and we're asking our elected leaders to use the power that they have to influence.
So where are you now?
I'm in a city bus that's being used as transport to take people who've just been arrested at the Capitol to the Capitol Police Station, and we're awaiting being processed.
Are you handcuffed?
Yes, we are, plastic handcuffs in the back. People who have a medical reason to have them transferred to the front are being permitted to do so.
How many are you?
This bus looks to be about 25. There are more buses. There are people outside.
The event organized by United for Peace and Justice was the kickoff event for what is supposed to be a week of lobbying and direct action. Thanks to Katya Kruglak from the D.C. Radio Co-op and the IMC D.C. for help on this report. Well, over the weekend, tens of thousands rallied at the foot of the Washington Monument in the nation's capital as President-elect Bush plotted a military advance with his three allies. Damu Smith, founder of Black Voices for Peace, was among the speakers, and he issued a call to action.
Brothers and sisters, good afternoon. This morning I read the front page of the Washington Post, and there was an article about the fact that billions of dollars are being slashed from state school budgets all around the country. I'm beginning to think that when Bush said, leave no child behind, he meant that he was going to take all of our young people to fight this evil war in the Middle East and cut back funds here at home in our school system. I just want to mention to all of you all that this anti-war movement must be transformed into another kind of movement. Because if we are going to stop the madmen in Washington, we're going to have to turn this society upside down and put the people in power right away to get rid of these people who are about to plunge the entire world into a Holocaust. Next week, we must begin the process of nonviolent militant civil disobedience. It is time for us to act up on another level. We need everybody in the schools, shut them down. Everybody in the workplaces, shut them down. New York Stock Exchange said, shut it down. Chicago Stock Exchange, shut it down. The capital of the United States. All those Congress people who did not vote with us. The White House. All of the institutions of power that financed the war machine. But we're going to do it in a nonviolent way. We're not going to curse anybody. We're not going to hurt anybody. But we are going to shut it down. Finally, one of the first things we've got to do in order to fundamentally transform this country is to get rid of those who are running the country right now. And by that I mean, we've got to vote Bush, Cheney, Condoleezza, Powell, Wolfowitz, get them out of Dodge, vote them out of office right now in the next elections. Impeach Bush. Impeach Bush.
Damu Smith, the founder of Black Voices for Peace and a member of both ANSWER and United for Peace and Justice. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.